It's time for the Matt and Jeff Radio Hour from PopDose.com and Addicted to Vinyl. Now, here are your hosts, Matt Wardlaw and Jeff Giles.
Welcome to episode number 14 of the Matt and Jeff Radio Hour. And I'm, of course, Matt Wardlaw, for the five people that don't know that out there. Boy, Jeff, that sounds very egotistical. There's a lot more than five. But I just thought I would just throw that out there right away. It just sound like a jerk right off the bat.
Get it out of the way.
The guy that you know much better than me is a guy named Jeff Giles, who does these things with me every week. He owns the great website, PopDose.com. And as far as I'm concerned, he owns the rest of the internet, too. So
jeez,
each time that we do these things, I'm just humbled to be in his mere presence. So how are you, sir?
Well, I don't know how I could have a single complaint in the world after an intro like that. And besides, we have Mr. Nat Osborne here, so those are two reasons why I have to be having a great day right now.
Yeah, we have to be having a great day because we're not sure how long the great day is going to continue. I don't know where you find some of these people, but I don't know if you noticed this, but Nat has quite a sizable band.
Yeah.
And so if we were to upset him, I think there's at least seven... He has at least six or seven helping hands to come and beat the snot out of us.
With a lot of heavy metal in the lineup, too.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, we wield a Barry Sax, amongst other things. So we got mm-hmm. heavy things to come after you guys with.
Welcome, Nat. It's good to have you here with us, man.
Well, thanks. Good to be here.
You're joining us, and you know we're going to talk about your new record, which I guess is just about to drop. It's called the King and the Clown, and mm-hmm. you're just mere days away from having this thing officially out for the world to take hold of and enjoy. So I guess starting there, tell us a little bit about the record, and I guess the record from your perspective.
Yes, I mean, man, we're less than a week away. It comes out next Thursday, so. It's been a long road. I mean, it's been some of these songs I've written over the past 4 or 5 years. The recording process took about a year, and then it's taken about better part of another year to kind of shop it around, figure out that we had to put it out independently, and here we are, and we're putting it out. And I could not be more excited. I'm just ready to get this thing out and have people hear it. And band's been on the road, so we're hoping to have something to give all these people who are like, where's the CD? When do we get the CD? I was like, well, here's the CD. We're excited for it. So
there's a lot of things to talk about this record, but I guess I'll start with it's kind of an interesting style of music. There's a lot of different stuff going on here, and I'm just interested to know at how you, arrived at, playing the style of music that you're doing, and when you mount a project like this with the size of the lineup that you have in this band, it's not the most economically friendly idea to have and go, okay, this is going to be an easy win. I mean, there's a lot riding on a project like this.
Yeah, certainly it's a mountain to move too. I mean, but it's worth it. I love writing in a lot of different styles, and I like arranging for a lot of different instruments. I mean, right now we're performing as a 7-piece. If I had it my way, we'd have a full orchestra, but it's kind of hard to take a full orchestra, put them in a van, and drive them to DC or Boston and start playing shows on the road. So we're dealing with seven right now, we work in a lot of different styles, and that's kind of I think kind of our greatest strength to a certain extent. Mixing rock and reggae and klezmer and jazz and pop and all these different things into one wild set. I think it kind of keeps people engaged. I think these days people are used to, on their iPod, putting it on shuffle and hearing a folk song after a rock song after a hip hop song. And I think because that's the generation that I grew up in, that's kind of how I think of music. And I'm trying to, all these styles are floating around in my head, and I'm trying to figure out how we can blend them to make new styles and then translate to a 7-piece band with a 3-piece horn section. And try to find the middle ground between that.
It's got an old school kind of big band feel to it in places. Mm-hmm. Where did that influence come in?
Honestly, I think that just came from having the horns in the band. I mean, I love Duke Ellington, and I love Count Basie. I love old big band recordings. There's a radio show in New York every Sunday that plays a ton of Sinatra, and I grew up listening to that. So I just think that stuff's kind of in my in my bones. And I think when we brought when the three-piece horn section became such an integral part, I started listening back to those recordings again and thinking about all the different sounds and different timbres and different tones you can get from horns. And I kept going back to that music. And I wanted to write in that style. So, you know, try to appropriate what I could from that and still keep it as modern as possible.
I think it's cool because there's elements of what you're doing, and this is what grabbed me right when I started listening to the first track. There's elements of what you're doing that obviously anybody like you that has, like, say, the courage to, like, say, mount a project like this and attack music in this way, it's like there's elements of what you're doing that you're, you know, kind of keeping an old musical style alive that, like, it's not automatic anymore for people to say, hey, I want to put together a big band, you know, a 7-piece band, a 12-piece band, whatever. It's just like, it's not the traditional thing anymore.
Well, it's not because, well, for a lot of reasons, and I think about this often. I mean, I think there's a lot of people kind of making music on laptops, going out and DJing, and I think largely that's just because that's what's available to people. That's the tools that are available to people, and it's also easier from a financial perspective to kind of just go out there and be one guy with a computer. It's a lot harder to be 7 guys on stage, and are we going to fit on this stage? Are we going to, you know, there's a lot of logistical things that come with being in a big band. But for me, it's just a lot of fun to get up with 6 or 7 people and make music with a bunch of people. I just have more fun. It's worth all the logistical nightmares to make it happen, I think.
Yeah, I wanted to thank you for using the horn section. Matt and I both grew up listening to Chicago, so we're both suckers for that stuff. But
I think
what's more important than the fact that the songs feature horns is just how intelligently they incorporate the horns. I mean, these are really smart, punchy brass arrangements that they're not just there for window dressing.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. And you know, it's funny. It's like I've always been more of I've always preferred writing for strings, and then I don't know, started writing some funky songs, and I was like, this needs horns. I brought the horns in, I was like, this is it. I just got hooked, started writing more and more and more horn arrangements, and now the songs are based around the horn arrangements to a certain extent. I mean, the songs I would like to think work on their own, but, like, you know, we've played as a quartet, and the whole time we're just like, man, where are those horns? I'm up there singing horn parts that aren't there, so... Yeah, I think a lot. I think it's fun to have horns. I think a lot of bands put in horns, but they do a lot of, like, bam, ba ba da ba, you know, little flutters here and there. For us, it's like, you know, often the arrangements are integral. They need the horn section. So, and I'm lucky in New York, being able to play with some of the best horn players around. And you know, it's just a pleasure to bring on the kind of people I'm able to play with these days and hear what they bring to the project.
And at the same time, just like Matt said, it's a really eclectic record. I mean, there's that big band sound, there's the live band stuff, and then there are tracks on the record that are really more kind of intricately arranged and produced. I mean, Leave All This to Me almost sounds like a Tears for Fears song to me. And then the closing tune on the record, where Morning used to be, it sounds like there's a little bit of a piano fill in there where you're kind of hinting at Gershwin a little bit even.
Yeah, quote that a little bit. That's a tough thing, because I wanted to put it in at the end too, and my producer was like, "Nah, man,
it's too much.
Any more, and you're gonna get sued." but yeah, no, that's a little piece of Rhapsody in Blue, because that song is about New York, and Rhapsody in Blue is always about New York. It's the quintessential New York piece of music. I used to listen to Rhapsody in Blue like every day when the sun was going down, watching the sunset over the skyline. And I think that just kind of soaked in me and came out.
That eclectic approach, that seems to be a kind of a common thing for artists who are starting out. You know, there's kind of an urge to want people to know about everything that you can do.
Yeah, I agree.
But it doesn't seem like that was your whole motivation for doing that.
No. And you're right. I agree. I have a tendency to write in a ton of different styles, and sometimes it's just flexing, you know, muscle, like, hey, can I write in this? And sometimes it's just because I listen to a lot of different styles. But, you know, the interesting thing, I think, is finding your unique sound, finding the middle ground. I do think this record's very eclectic, and I think it's going to be interesting continuing to work with these different styles and these different modes of writing, and continuing to work towards integrating them more and more and more. And I think that's kind of the next step for the band. But it's fun to be able to get up on stage and play in reggae, and then play a like low key ambient song, and then play a big band song. And you know, it's our job to try to sell that as being one project, one band. And you know, we're more and more figuring out how to do that. And it's just a lot of fun.
And it sounds like, from what we were talking about a little bit earlier, you know, because it has been a little while coming, you know, to getting this, you know, record out, you've had a lot of time to, like, develop this material on stage with the band.
Yeah, we have. And, you know, what's kind of interesting is that the band kind of came together through the process of recording the album. There was a band before this called Nat Osborne and the Diamond Allegory, and I kind of picked that name because I didn't like it, because I knew it was a temporary. I didn't want to get stuck with it. I knew it was a temporary incarnation of the band. It was kind of like the beta version, the testing version of the band, and then as we kind of worked out the arrangements and brought in some players to work on the record, who got really into the project, that it kind of slowly became the Nat Osborne band. And then over the past year or so, having played these songs, switched up the arrangements, it's become more and more integral. So if I could, I would love to go back and just record the band live the way it is right now. And which is actually what we're going to do next week at the release show at Le Poisson Rouge. We're going to record the whole thing, videotape the whole thing, and put it up. So
excellent.
So mm-hmm. with the record that we're holding, are you happy with how it came out?
I'm very happy with how it came out. But you know, I like to look to the future. I'm excited about the next record too. I think that's healthy. Always be looking forward. But I'm very excited about this record. I'm very excited to put it out, for people to hear it. And I think it's I think we did a good job capturing some pretty complex music and some pretty eclectic music, and trying to fit it into one record. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, because I think you know, that's the thing with a band like this, that you know, it can be awfully hard to capture what you're doing here and have it not sound sterile with the final recording. And that's the thing, is that I think this stuff, you know, Jeff touched on it a little bit earlier with the horn arrangements. You know, it's like the Chicago thing was something that I definitely thought of, just because it's like, you sometimes hear horns on a record where it's just like, it's a large band setup and all that kind of stuff, and it has a tendency to sound sleepy. And it's like, this stuff definitely has some edge to it, and the recording breathes.
Yes.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I was lucky to work with a really good producer, Alex Billowitz, and a really good, some good engineers. We got it mixed very well. You know, I was through and through, everyone who played on this record and everyone who was a part of this record is top notch. I'm really, really blessed to be able to work with people like that. But we also made it a point to play as much of it as possible live. You know, the drums, bass, guitar, keys. That everyone's playing together live, as opposed to like, all right, let's lay down the drums, let's lay down the bass, then let's lay down the guitar. So I think there is kind of a bit of an old school approach to it, and for me that's important, because I think there's a difference when musicians, good musicians, are playing together at the same time, creating, you know, working off each other, as opposed to kind of going back and listening to a recording and overdubbing it. And that's something that we consciously chose to do.
Well, why don't we, stop down and have you play a tune for us from the record, and we'll let you pick this first one, and I guess, you know, tell us a little bit about the tune going in.
First tune will be a little to the left. It's a song about, essentially about hipster girls, to boil it down. I went to a liberal arts college, and I live in Brooklyn, so I'm surrounded by hipster girls all the time. But it's not about anyone. People are always, you know, kind of trying to conjecture about who this song is about. It's not about anyone in particular. It's just about a type of person, about a girl who's got her heart in the right place, even her head screwed on a little bit to the left.
She's got teardrops tattooed to her eyes, but I've known her for a while now, and I've never seen her cry. She loves to wear leather, and she hates when I eat meat. She's a hardcore hippie vegan with snake skin on her feet. Where she drives a Jeep to rallies, where they tell people to bike. She swears by solar panels, yeah, she leaves on all the lies, yeah. For all her contradictions, we still love her to death, 'cause she's always had her head screwed on just a little to the left. Yeah, she's always had her head screwed on just a little to the left. Oh, and I should tell her, but I don't have the heart. And I should tell her, but I don't know where to start. In a wee, and her ripped jeans, they're designer, though they're made to look cheap. For all her contradictions, always still love her to death, yeah, 'cause she's always had her head screwed on just a little. Out on the street, yeah, she sounds elite, but they gotta eat, and she knows that homo Joe down on Hope Street, yeah, he ain't got no. And she leaves at the detail that a hotel have 5 stars. But for all her contradictions, always still love her to death, 'cause she has always had her head screwed on just a little to the left. Yeah, she's always had her head screwed on just a little. To the left.
I wanted to ask you about the set of songs that you finished before this. I read an interview where you talked about how you recorded another album and then you shelved it because, as you put it, it was almost like the material I wrote was better than I was.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in that because I think that's a wall that a lot of artists, especially young artists, bump up against, you know, the idea that limitations define style.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, I think it was kind of a long road and a soul-searching couple years after moving to New York. I've always been so conceptually based. I've always judged art based upon concept. And I think for me, it was learning the importance of the technical aspects. You know, I didn't go to conservatory. I went to a liberal arts school where I learned a lot about thinking and interdisciplinary thinking and thought and creative thought, but maybe didn't put as much time into sitting in the practice room and running scales 8 hours a day, which a lot of my, you know, colleagues and friends did. And I moved to New York and kind of had a, oh, okay, kind of moment, and kind of had to figure out all the things that I needed to work on to become a better musician and kind of dig into the material that I'd written. And I still stand by that. I think, you know, I made this record and I was proud of the record for where I was. I was probably 21 years old. I thought it was good, but it wasn't good enough. And I kept listening back to my favorite records, and it was kind of a long process of thinking, all right, well, so yeah, what is this record that I've always loved and listened to have that mine is lacking, and how can I, you know, appropriate that and learn that? And the list is very long. and I don't think I've probably haven't learned all of it. I think it's a long process of learning how to make a great record and become a great musician. But I think, you know, it was a tough process, but I definitely learned a lot. And then when Alex approached me about doing this record, I kind of felt like, okay, I've gone through the ringer. I've pinpointed a lot of these things, and I think I'm ready to kind of give this another shot. And we went in and did it, and I feel really good about how it ended up.
Yeah, it's a smart decision. It's just a hard one to make. It's got to hurt, you know, especially when we're in an environment where you can really record an album and have it out in the space of a few days. You know,
absolutely.
To take a slow road to getting your first record out is to be applauded, I think.
Well, I appreciate that, and I think about so many of my favorite artists. Their debut albums are phenomenal. You know, you listen to Fiona Apple's first record, and she's like 18 or something. It's just astonishing. Or Rufus Wainwright's first record, and he's in his early 20s. It's so thorough and it's so good. But you know, then you go back and listen to Pablo Honey by Radiohead, and nobody talks about that record. But
this is the Naked Baby Pictures.
Yeah. They're like, you know, probably the best band on the planet, but you know, no one's talking about Pablo Honey. So, I think there's a lot of different paths. But for me, it was really important to kind of get this first statement right, and feel confident in that. And also, I just think in this music industry that's super cluttered, like you said, anyone can, you know, buy an Apple computer, record on GarageBand, and put it up on TuneCore 3 days later. I think you kind of got to give it your best shot to even just stand a chance to rise above the noise.
It's true.
And I think it's awesome. I think it's phenomenal that we live in an age where anyone can create what they want to create and put it out there. But for me, I just wanted to take my time, figure out how to get it to be what I wanted it to be. And also, I think it's tougher when you want to do like big band arrangements and you know, really lushly orchestrated music. I wouldn't be able to. I could not make this record from a home studio. So, kind of had to go big or go home.
I was just talking to a playwright the other day about how theater, you know, because of the way technology has gone over the last decade and change or so, that theater is one of the last art forms, if not the last art form, where you really are forced to depend on other people. And I think that the key component that really sets your music apart is that it is made, that's the sound of people working together.
Hmm.
And you don't get to hear that as often as I would like, certainly.
Well, man, I appreciate that. Thank you.
well, thank you.
Well, yeah, that's important to me. I've always loved playing in bands. I've always, you know, and I come from a mix of a classical and jazz background, and it was always important to me to kind of keep some element of improvisation alive. And I think really good musicians working together to improvise and kind of reinvent music there's nothing more exciting than that in music, I think. Even though jazz is maybe not as popular as it once was and, you know, constantly evolving, I think that aspect of musicians working together in time to kind of, you know, figure out what that moment is going to be, is to me still probably the most profound musical experience you can be a part of and listen to. So I wanted to keep an aspect of musicians working together in time as a part of my project.
Well, I don't think that Jeff will stop applauding you for that. So I'll applaud you for that as well. So we're definitely on your side with that that school of thinking. Before I move on and ask the next question of Nat here, Jeff, I just have to know, were you wearing flowing robes when you talked with the playwright?
It was a flowing robe with a blaze. I was wearing a jacket over it with elbow patches. Smoking a
pipe. I thought I noticed that you had been growing your beard out, but I just thought that was some like belated like no-vim beard kind of thing going on.
No-vim
beard.
Well, like
Nat, I want to ask, so where did, you've mentioned him a couple times, where did Alex come into the process and how did you connect with him?
Alex and I actually went to school together, and we were kind of like the two keyboard players at our little liberal arts school in upstate New York. So we had a kind of funny, healthy rivalry when we were at that small school, and then we both graduated and moved to New York and realized that we needed to team up in order to survive. So he got into production and was working super hard and was getting really good and kind of, you know, decided it was time to make a big statement, and I was honored that his big statement was my record. So he approached me about it, talked to me about how he envisioned doing it, and I just felt it was time. He felt it was time, and we jumped in, and he was great. He was great to have on board. It was a really good.
So one. Did.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, did the idea of, you know, putting together, I guess, a larger band, did that come about through him or collaboratively with him?
No, I was actually playing with the Seven Piece at that point.
okay.
But yeah, the way we were going to go about the recording process, and frankly, who were we going to use on the recording process, were largely him. So the band kind of, that's why I say the Nat Osborne Band kind of came about through the recording process. There was a large turnover in personnel. The arrangements kind of changed, kind of streamlined everything, found, you know, if the record's eclectic now, we were even more eclectic back then. So we were trying to kind of find some middle ground. And I think we did. I think he did a great job kind of bringing in the right musicians, bringing in the right, you know, he helped, you know, edit some of the songs to be what they are. He was just a pleasure to work with. We had a very good working relationship where if he kind of put his foot down on something, I would back off. And if I put my foot down on something, he would back off. And we never actually really got in a fight on the whole record. Kind of just trusted each other. That's why it sounds the way it does.
I wanted to ask a little bit more about the tracking process, because you mentioned that a lot of it was live, but it isn't like the record sounds like a live document. There is a fair amount of obvious editing and production in there, and I wondered how that balance developed, if it was, you know, if you always had that stuff in your head, or if it it just kind of arose from knob twiddling in the studio. You know, how organic was that process?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's a kind of a mix of both. I have a tendency when I write songs to hear them largely fully orchestrated, but it's tough to get that out. You know, hearing 14 parts, it's tough to get that out of your head and into the real world. So to a certain extent, this was just kind of realizing the full orchestrations that I had envisioned, and a lot of it was also just playing around in the studio, and a lot of it was Alex or I sitting at a keyboard coming up with a part or singing something out or playing with sounds. So, you know, we kind of had a nice base of you know, drums, bass, guitar, basic keyboard parts to work with, laid down a scratch vocal, and then brought in the horn section, had them cut everything together. We thought the blend of the horns was going to be really important, so we made sure that they played everything together. And then, yeah, then we had fun. Just, let's try, you know, Farfisa on this part. Okay, it doesn't work. What about clav? Right. Oh, man, we got.
Yeah, I was thinking about that little bit. I was thinking about that bit in Yours Alone where there's that little toy piano part, and then you shift into that breakdown where the song's just kind of stomping along.
Yeah, yeah. That that was definitely pre-composed, that whole thing. That's and I always wanted toy piano. That was one I had to had to talk Alex into, because he was like, "Really, you're gonna put toy piano on this? You want nobody to take it seriously?" And I was like, "Nah, it's cute. Come on, let's do it." So yeah, that and Yours Alone is actually one of the tunes that we. A couple of the tunes we were on that record that I was telling you about that we had scrapped, but we totally changed the arrangement around. I actually think there was a lot more toy piano on the old arrangement.
Well, maybe we should get you to play another song. And Jeff, I don't know if you have a specific pick, or should we let Nat take it again, or what do you think?
If you guys got one you want to hear, I'll play it.
He picked a solid one the first time around. I'm comfortable letting him stay at the wheel for the second one.
Yeah, I would go with Fire in the World if you can do that one.
Yeah, Fire in the Wind? Absolutely. Let's.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Do you want me to say something about it before I jump in?
Yeah, just talk about that one a little bit.
Fire in the Wind, man. This song, there's a reason why it's the first song in the record. It's, to me, it's one of the oldest songs. It's definitely the oldest song. In the repertoire on the record, and when I wrote this song, I scrapped every song I'd ever written before. I kind of wrote this song. I wrote this song, and I was like, "Oh, okay, well, that's it." And I literally never played any of the songs that I'd play at all before that ever again. How I wrote this song was I was actually sitting in a musicianship class, and we were learning about. What are they, 6-4 chords? I got a D in the class, so I obviously didn't do so well. Probably the reason I got a D in the class was because she would be playing these things and I'd hear things in my head and I'd ask her to the bathroom and I'd run downstairs to the piano and come back 45 minutes later. And that's what happened with this song, was sitting in class and that first chord was played. Where is it? Heard that and I was like, oh, I know what I need to do with that. Literally, the song just came into my head. So I went downstairs and sat at the piano, and the song just came out. I mean, whole thing, top to bottom. Went back up to class 40 minutes later. Got yelled at by my teacher. It was so worth it. you know, here we are still playing it. I mean, it's grown, it's shifted. It's that that was added later, actually by an old horn player in the band. So the song's kind of morphed and taken shape and grown, but it's definitely the launching point for this record and for this band, and that's why it's the first song on the record.
Should have learned
darling. I know this girl. I guess she thinks she's always right. She's stubborn as all hell. In her sanding and fickle fights. And how is she cold when her head is filled with flames? And how does she hold so much anger in that little frame? And she just lets it burn. Oh, and the thing she should have learned. Rising like the ashes of a fire, burning away.
Very cool. I'm gonna go home now and think long and hard about how I retitled that song "Fire in the World" instead of its rightful title of "Fire in the Wind." You know, sometimes, Nat, I'm gonna be honest with you. Sometimes I think that Jeff sabotages some of these things that he sends me and sends me just fake track listings. I should probably
I should do that.
You know it. At least when we had you play Little to the Left, I knew that there was actually a song called Little to the Left on the record, and that wasn't just Jeff messing with me.
I should start renaming artists, too.
That's all right.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm used to people getting my name wrong. I'm used to people calling me Nate Osborne or always adding an E somewhere in my name. So I'm used to you know, retitling things.
Now that I've given Jeff the idea, next time, you know, we're talking to you, he'll instead tell me that we're talking to Jeffrey Osborne. So this is not going to end well.
Yeah. Brush up on your Jeffrey Osborne.
Well, I want to ask, you know, about the record, you know, you talking about, you know, writing, you know, Fire in the Wind and kind of just pitching everything that came before that. When you got down to, like, say, writing the songs for this record, how much of a pool of songs did you end up with? Did you end up with a lot more songs than what we've got on the recorded record, or what was the deal there?
I would say we probably axed 4 or 5 song ideas. But going in, we kind of... But I would say only 2 of those really stood a shot at getting on the record in the first place. So, yeah, I mean, about 2 years ago, no, probably 3... maybe even 4, God, I don't know. Time's tough, huh? I decided to split my whole repertoire into 2 bands. Basically, it was an easy split. I write some songs on guitar, and I write some songs on piano. And the piano songs became the Nat Osborne Band, and the guitar songs became Hawthorne, which is my folk band. So it used to be that I would just have all my songs in one band, and that was just an eclectic mess. If you think this record's eclectic, imagine adding a bunch of folk songs on guitar to the mix. So But there were one or two of those songs that I'd written on guitar that kind of did fit stylistically, so we were trying to figure out if any of those would work. But just for sake of simplicity and continuity, we just decided that all the piano-based songs would be the ones going on the record, except for So Wrong It's Right, the eighth track on the record. That is a guitar song. Yeah, I would say there were one or two really that kind of went into consideration, but we arrived at this track listing and we liked it and we pulled the trigger on it, and I don't think any of us are looking back.
What's the plan on playing shows with this lineup around the record outside of like New York City?
So the plan is, you know, we play in D.C. fairly regularly. We play in Boston. We go up to Portland, Maine. We try to get around the Northeast as much as possible. It is no small deal bringing seven people on the road. So our goal is to do a national tour with the seven piece. But I think in order to do that, we will probably continue to play with the seven piece band in markets we can get to in a day or two, like Philly, DC, Boston. Definitely continue to play in New York. New York's been great for us, growing and growing. And then I will probably head out with a trio to get as far west as Chicago and as far south as Nashville and Atlanta. And then if it continues to grow, we'll take the whole seven-piece band out.
I was curious about that, too. We just talked a little while ago to Bruce Hornsby, and he talked about how tough it is for him to tour with his band. And, you know, he's got a little bit of name value attached. So to start out with a lineup like the one that you've got has just got to be a headache that I can't even imagine in terms of planning a tour.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, scheduling, logistics, figuring out how to feed people, sleep people, it's a lot. And I'm doing everything, so... you know, managing, booking, writing, leading, rehearsing, doing everything myself right now. So
drawing a map of where you're supposed to stand on the stage too, I bet.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We send our stage plot out and sometimes the people are like, can you maybe bring less people? I go out with the quartet, just drums, bass, guitar, and myself. And that's been actually working out pretty well. But, you know, you guys said it yourself earlier, it's the horn arrangements are pretty integral, so
yeah.
It's tough to go out and not have those guys with us. You know, we want to play as much as possible, and so in order to do that, we'll probably have to do some longer tours with smaller ensembles, and then hopefully if the record's selling well and people are into it and they're... you know, they want to hear the whole thing. We'll get the whole band on the road because that's my ultimate goal.
Well, here's hoping. I think people need to hear this, especially live. I'm really looking forward to hearing the recording of that show.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Yeah, the live show is definitely a spectacle. We're really really excited about where our live show is right now. It's been a lot of fun. We all can't wait to get back up on stage.
And I would guess that like you having the plans to like say record and video the show that you guys are doing, probably part of that is it gives you something that you can like say send like a video link to like say a promoter in a certain market and say, you know, here's what you're getting.
Right. Yeah. In fact, we just released a live video last week and we're about to release another one on Monday of the band playing live in a loft in Chelsea. It's an 8-camera shoot. We recorded the whole thing live.
Nice.
And so we just put up Fire in the Wind last week up on YouTube. It's just the title is Nat Osborne Band Fire in the Wind Live at the Nomad Loft, and we're about to put up Yours Alone as well this coming week to get people excited about the CD. And that is, yeah, I mean, you know, I've had people reach out saying, how do we get your band down to our club, or how do we, you know, we want to get your band on this festival, which is great. So people are reacting to seeing the band in video and wanting to have that experience live. So hopefully there'll be more and more of that, because it's kind of what it takes, is someone being willing to, you know, to jump in and say, what does it take to get you guys down here?
With you doing the booking, what's your targeting process, you know, when you're like looking at like say markets that you haven't been in? I guess, you know, we were talking before the interview and you were telling us, you know, about some touring that you've done outside of this. So I would guess that the various touring stuff that you've done has probably given you a pretty good awareness of a lot of markets that gives you, I guess, a slight handle on what to go after when you're looking at certain cities.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's always a tough call to make, you know. When you go to a new city, you never know what you're getting yourself into. I mean, we've gone into gigs where we thought we would have a really good crowd and we played to 20 people, and we've gone into gigs where we thought we played to 20 people and the place was packed. So it can be hard to gauge, but generally you kind of know. I mean, like, I'm aching to get out to Chicago. I know that we have some fans out in Chicago, but not a lot, so I probably wouldn't be able to take the 7-piece band out right away. But it's just about kind of crunching numbers and being smart and knowing when, you know, trying to be realistic about what you think you can do. And sometimes sometimes you get a private gig. Someone wants to pay you a couple grand to come out, and that allows you to bring the whole band. So it's every situation is different, and you kind of have to weigh a bunch of different factors to figure it out. It's nice for us to know that we can play a bunch of markets in the Northeast and walk home with having put a roof over our heads and some food in our stomachs, and that's kind of what we're looking to build from. But I'd love to get out and do more. Just about kind of being realistic and not ending up with your thumb sticking out on the side of the road to get home.
Well, if you go to Chicago, we know a guy. You can stay in his apartment.
Well, does he have room for 7 people?
Yeah. We haven't asked him or anything, but...
But he's fine with it, yeah.
We're comfortable volunteering his place.
Well, I appreciate that. it does come down to that sometimes. Sometimes it takes, a friend who's got a big apartment saying, hey, please stay at my place. Yeah. I'll cook you breakfast. And that's that, bands live and die by that stuff, especially 7-piece bands.
We actually hadn't thought about that piece of it, but I think we could definitely have this guy cook you breakfast as well.
Oh, well, I would, for thankful, because I'd be very grateful for his hospitality, so I'd be happy to cook him breakfast.
Well, that's what would be kind of unique about this is that when we both think of this individual, hospitality is not really one of the words we associate.
Oh, yeah.
But, I believe, and I know Jeff does too, that everybody has that potential to turn over a new leaf, and this might be the moment where the Nat Osborne band helps to turn this guy around.
You guys might be the key.
I would be happy to be the guinea pig in this situation and see if we can turn him into a hospitable person. And if he doesn't, I'll cook him breakfast.
Nice.
It wouldn't be the first time. Well, I often try to cook breakfast to people who put us up.
Well, what else do you have that you want folks to know about as this record is about to come out?
Well, I think it's mostly the record. I think the band's playing live, and we'll try to get out to whatever city you're in, and we will, by the end of 2013, putting together some shows right now and some new towns for us. But really, it's just about the record. I mean, this is our debut album. This is the first statement. This is the first big, big moment for us. So please give it a listen, and if you like it, tell a friend. Tell a friend's friend. Tell an enemy. Tell your coworker. Tell your cousin who works at Atlantic Records, and that's how this
I don't think you want to sign with Atlantic Records these days.
No, probably not. I got a buddy who works there, and he was basically saying the same thing. I will not say his name, but yeah.
The album is called "The King and the Clown," mm-hmm. and Nat, it's just been a pleasure to have you here with us today.
Yeah, Matt,
and
Jeff, thank you guys so much. It's been great talking to you guys. Thanks for
it's been our pleasure.
NatOsborne.com is the place where you can find all of the latest details, everything that you need to know that relates to the Nat Osborne band. And Jeff and I have our fingers crossed right there with Nat that hopefully that tour section will be just filled with tour dates very soon. But you owe it to yourself to check this record out. So do hit up the website, and you can also, of course, hit our website for further details. We'll throw the couple of videos that Nat talked about into the post when we put this thing up. Popdose.com, of course, is where you can find all of that goodness, Jeff Giles. Did we leave anything out?
I would just say that even if this record was mediocre, which it isn't, I think just the idea of a band of this size making a living, making music in 2013 is fucking inspirational. And if you love music, you owe it to yourself to check out this record. I love it.
Thank you.
Well, like I said, thank you. I get a lot of emails from publicists, and I usually roll my eyes every single time one ends up in my inbox. But this music grabbed me right away. You know, like I said, it's the sound of people working together, and you don't get to hear that as often as I would like these days. And so I hope you guys have a smashing success with this.
Well, thanks so much. I appreciate that. I hope so too.
And when you get to that apartment in Chicago, if you want to have a smashing good time there, emphasis on the word smashing, you can do that as well.
You guys got to tell me more about this guy, because this mystery is growing steadily. I'm intrigued.
All right, guys, we'll wrap it up there. NatOsborne.com. Do visit it. Visit often and listen often. Surely, Jeff and myself would not steer you wrong. And even if you think that's not true, we promise on this one we won't steer you wrong. So
check it out.
Thanks for joining us today. Episode 14 of the Matt and Jeff Radio Hour is in the books. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.